For a long time, looking for information online was it was basically like panning for gold.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you'd dip your sieve into the river, which was Google, shake it around a bit, and eventually you'd find a shiny little nugget of truth. It took some patience, but the water was mostly clear.
Right, you could actually see the bottom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But today, that river is gone. Searching online is no longer panning for gold. It is, I mean, it's a negotiation with marketers.
Yeah, you are just constantly dodging people trying to sell you things.
You're just trying to find a simple, straightforward fact, and you have to dig through like 3,000 words of SEO-optimized sludge just to find out what temperature to bake a potato.
And pop-up ads and AI-generated filler. We're completely drowning in the
We
noise.
really are. Which brings us to our focus today. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
We are looking at a stack of incredibly high-signal sources today that tackle this exact problem, and it's all centered around a tool built specifically to filter out that sludge, which is Perplexity AI.
Yeah, it's a fascinating shift in how we find things out.
But before we get into the weeds, and per our mission to always give you the signal first, here is the map for today's dive. There are four major takeaways from this material that we're going to explore.
Lay them out.
First, we need to accept that traditional search is broken beyond repair. The old models just, they cannot handle the current volume of garbage data. Second, because the tools are changing, the way you prompt has to change. You have to demand outcomes and evidence, not just throw keywords at a wall.
Which is a huge behavioral shift for most of us. And third, your own human skepticism is about to become your absolute most valuable research asset. You have to use these new synthesis tools to surface conflicting research rather than, just letting them do the thinking for you.
Right. And finally, our sources leave us with this jarring, almost existential contrast. We're going to look at the fact that we are currently generating infinite virtual worlds with AI, while at the exact same moment, the real-world human languages that hold our actual history are going extinct at a terrifying rate.
We are building the perfect library while the books are burning.
That is exactly it. So let's unpack this. Let's start with that first signal about search being broken. Why is Perplexity AI suddenly the tool we are talking about? I mean, why not just stick with Google or use traditional ChatGPT?
So, to really understand why this tool is different, you have to look at the pedigree of the people who built it. Perplexity was founded by researchers and engineers who came out of OpenAI, Google, and DeepMind.
Heavy hitters.
Exactly. These are the architects of the current paradigms of search and generative AI. They didn't just study the old systems, they built them. And because they built them, they saw the fatal flaws from the inside.
What was the main flaw they saw?
They realized that large language models, on their own, hit a hard wall when it comes to rigorous factual research.
Okay, let's put this in perspective for anyone listening who feels that daily frustration. Using Google today is basically like walking into a massive library, asking the librarian a specific question about, say, cellular biology, and having them dump 4,000 books on your desk, point at the pile, and just wish you luck. You are left to do all the sorting, all the evaluating, and the synthesizing yourself.
The cognitive burden is entirely on you. You're doing all the heavy lifting.
And then on the flip side, using traditional ChatGPT for research is like talking to a highly articulate, incredibly confident person at a dinner party.
Oh, I love this analogy.
Right. They tell you a fascinating historical fact, and when you ask them, "Hey, where did you read that?" they just stare at you blankly and say they just know it. They completely refuse to cite their sources.
Or worse, you find out later they hallucinated the whole thing by mixing up two completely different historical events. Because they rely on this frozen, static memory of whatever they read, a year ago.
So if Google is the massive unsorted pile of books, and ChatGPT is the confident but unsightable dinner guest, what is the underlying mechanism that makes Perplexity different? How does it actually fix this?
Okay, so it uses an architecture that is crucial to understand called retrieval augmented generation, or RU.
RBAC. Okay, sounds a bit technical.
It's a technical term, yeah, but the concept is highly intuitive. Instead of relying on a frozen neural network that just tries to predict the next word based on what it read months ago, Perplexity acts like a live search engine married to a summarizer.
Okay, so it's actively looking things up.
Exactly. When you ask it a question, it goes out into the live web, grabs the text from maybe 10 or 20 relevant current websites, pulls that text into its short-term memory, and writes a synthesized summary based strictly on those specific pages.
It's actively reading the live internet in real time,
Yeah.
rather than just trying to remember what it studied for a test last year.
Yes. And because it's working from that temporary workspace of live documents, it can do the most important thing of all, it can cite its sources. It places footnote links right in the text to prove exactly which website provided which claim.
Oh, wow. So it isn't just generating text, it is mapping the information.
Exactly, it's showing its work.
And that real-time multi-source synthesis with citations, I mean, that fundamentally changes the workflow. The sources we are looking at today highlight fact-checking, pulling citable statistics, and comparing complex trends as the primary use cases.
But, and this is a big but, this requires upgrading the user. We have to change our behavior.
Right. You cannot drive a spaceship the same way you ride a bicycle.
Beautifully put. Which brings us to our second big takeaway. We have to stop keyword searching. We've spent 25 years being conditioned to talk like cavemen just to appease algorithm.
Right, like typing vitamin D benefits into the search bar.
Or best laptop 2026. We strip away all the nuance and context because early search engines couldn't understand human intent. They just matched text strings. But when you are dealing with a synthesis engine, stripping away context destroys the value of the tool.
The concrete example from our material makes this incredibly clear. It says you just search vitamin D benefits, you will get a generic watered-down summary of like every low-tier health blog on the internet. It's totally useless.
Just the same sludge, but summarized.
Right. So instead, you have to ask for outcomes and evidence.
The structural shift in that prompt is everything. Instead of those caveman keywords, you ask, what does current clinical research say about vitamin D and immune function in adults? And please provide sources.
So you specify the domain clinical research.
Exactly. You specify the precise relationship you want analyzed immune function in adults. And you set the evidentiary standard by demanding sources.
You are shifting from asking for a topic to basically commissioning a targeted research brief.
Yes, you're becoming a research director.
Okay, hold on. I want to challenge this a bit because this is where the dynamic gets a little uncomfortable for me.
Go for it.
If I am just copying and pasting a claim from an article, throwing it into an AI, and demanding it synthesize the research and find the sources, aren't I risking massive intellectual laziness?
That is the big question.
More than that, if I am not doing the reading myself, how do I know the AI didn't just pick the five sources that happen to agree with its own algorithmic bias and completely ignore the rest? Aren't I just blindly trusting the machine's curation of the truth?
That is the defining anxiety of this technological leap. And honestly, it is a completely valid fear. If you use the tool passively, you absolutely will fall into a trap of algorithmic bias and intellectual laziness.
So how do we avoid that? Walk me through that. How does this not make me lazy?
Think about the old model of research. 80% of your mental stamina was spent on the mechanical hunt, right?
Oh, definitely.
You're opening 20 tabs, scrolling past autoplay video ads, hitting Spreetle plus F to find the relevant paragraph, hitting a paywall, backing out, trying another link. By the time you actually locate the original source of a claim, you're exhausted.
That is painfully accurate. Just finding the data drains your brain.
Exactly. The friction of the interface drains your capacity to think. So by automating that mechanical hunt, the AI is doing the grunt work. It brings the relevant text to your desk.
Okay, I see where you're going.
Now, instead of spending your energy gathering, you can spend 100% of your cognitive energy on analyzing the quality of those sources. You're elevating your role from a data gatherer to a data analyst.
But, and this addresses my fear of blind trust, that only works if you actually do the analysis.
Right, you have to verify the output. You have to step up.
Which naturally brings us to the third signal from our material. The imperative of human friction. We have to be the ones introducing friction into this incredibly smooth, automated process. Our sources are very explicit about this. Your first prompt should never be your last prompt.
Never. You have to use follow-up prompts to drill deeper. The beauty of a conversational synthesis engine is that it retains the context of the discussion.
You don't have to start over every time.
Exactly. If it hands you a brief on that vitamin D research, your immediate next step should be deliberately challenging the AI's answer. You ask, what were the limitations of the trials you just cited? Or break down the methodology of that second study.
You basically have to act like a cross-examining attorney. You don't just accept the first witness's testimony at face value. You push for the gaps in the story.
Yes, push for the gaps.
And one of the most critical things you can ask is for the counter research. If the AI gives you a neat, tidy summary of a medical benefit or an economic trend, you have to actively prompt it by asking, what does the conflicting research argue? Or, are there meta-analyses that dispute these findings?
Because knowledge is only valuable when it is understood in its full context, not just briefly consumed as a bullet point. If you let an AI hand you a single unified narrative without demanding the counterpoints, you are accepting an illusion of consensus.
And the real world is rarely that clean.
Right. Scientific and historical debates are incredibly messy. Critical thinking requires mapping the boundaries of a debate, and these tools are exceptional at mapping those boundaries, but only if you command them to do so.
That leads to what the material calls the ultimate golden rule. It sounds almost laughably simple, but in practice, it is the hardest discipline to maintain. Always click and read the original sources.
Yes. Do not just scan the AI's synthesized summary and walk away.
The summary is the menu. The original source is the meal. The AI is giving you a topographical map of the information, but you still have to walk the terrain yourself.
That is a perfect way to put it.
But that human friction, the effort to click the footnote, read the actual text, question the methodology, evaluate the bias, that is our defense mechanism. It's how we build real understanding instead of just accumulating temporary trivia.
And preserving that friction is becoming incredibly difficult when the tools for digital creation are vastly outpacing our ability to even process what is real.
Which is a perfect segue. Look at the transition in our source material. We move from discussing how to research truth to a tool that instantly manufactures reality.
Yeah, this is the tool of the week mentioned in the newsletter. It's a generative AI called Iliad, and it provides a really stark contrast to everything we just discussed about rigorous research.
Iliad is designed for creating game assets, right? But the scope of what it does is staggering. We need to explain how this actually works, because it isn't just generating a flat 2D image like the AI art generators from a few years ago.
Not at all. Iliad generates complex textures, fully realized characters, and entire 3D environments from absolute scratch.
From scratch? How does that even work?
The mechanism here is what makes it so profound. You can draw a crude 2D stick figure and maybe a couple of blocks on a screen. Iliad takes that simplistic input, and it doesn't just paint a picture. It mathematically computes a 3D space.
Wait, from a stick figure?
Yes. It generates the geometry, the UV mapping, the lighting physics, and the material textures to conjure a photorealistic, fully rendered fantasy village or a sci-fi landscape. A landscape that a human can actually walk through in virtual reality.
That is insane.
It translates a raw thought into a navigable digital environment in seconds.
So the speed of digital creation is practically instantaneous. We are conjuring entire complex digital worlds out of thin air. And the awe of that technological leap is incredible. You can build universes from your living room.
It feels like magic.
It does. But then, right next to that marvel, the source material drops a data point that gave me absolute whiplash.
The language extinction note?
Yeah. Globally, a human language disappears every 2 weeks. And the projection is that up to 90% of our languages could vanish in the next century. One every 2 weeks.
It is a deeply jarring contrast. On one screen, we possess the technology to instantly generate infinite virtual environments with Iliad, creating things that have never existed.
And on the exact same screen, we are reading that the real-world vessels of our actual human heritage are bleeding out at an astonishing rate. We are losing the real world while we fabricate digital ones.
And to really grasp the weight of this, we have to define what a language actually is. It's a mistake to think of different languages as just, you know, different sets of vocabulary words for the same underlying concepts.
Right, like just having the different word for apple or tree.
Exactly. A language isn't just a different dictionary. It's an entire operating system for understanding reality.
How do you mean? Break that down for me.
Well, languages contain unique idioms, historical contexts, and ways of categorizing nature that simply do not translate. There are indigenous languages that encode centuries of medicinal knowledge about local flora within the structure of the words themselves.
Wow.
There are cultural philosophies and ways of perceiving time and relationships that only exist within the grammar of specific dialects. So when a language dies, it isn't just that a dictionary becomes obsolete. An entire data set of human experience, observation, and scientific understanding of the natural world vanishes completely.
It's basically an archive of localized science and history being wiped from the server.
Yes, permanently.
Which brings us to the profound irony of this entire deep dive. I mean, think about it. We started by exploring Perplexity AI and how it uses RAG architecture to pull live data, synthesize it, and cite its sources. It's this omnipotent tool for capturing and organizing human knowledge.
Right.
But as our digital tools for synthesizing information become perfect, the actual diversity of the human knowledge they are meant to synthesize is collapsing.
We are building the most perfect, frictionless, efficient library in the history of the universe. We have the ultimate research assistant ready to fetch any document. But the books themselves, the diverse, complex, messy truths of the human experience encoded in these disappearing languages, they are quietly burning outside.
That is just, it really reframes everything we talked about regarding the mechanics of search. A synthesis engine is really only as good as the underlying data it trains on and searches through.
Exactly.
If the internet becomes a monoculture, if we lose the diversity of human thought, the AI has nothing meaningful to synthesize.
It simply becomes an echo chamber, endlessly summarizing the surviving dominant cultures. The human friction we talked about earlier, that deliberate effort required to question a consensus, to demand multiple perspectives, and to preserve original sources, it becomes much more than just a good research habit for a Thursday afternoon.
It becomes a cultural necessity.
Precisely. If we don't actively preserve the diversity of the data, the tools we built to analyze it become useless.
We started this deep dive talking about muddy water and fire hoses of information. We have incredible tools to filter that water now. We can extract the signal from the noise better than ever before.
Yeah.
But we also have to make sure the river itself doesn't run dry. The real-world data matters just as much as the algorithm processing it.
Which leaves us with a final lingering thought. Something for you, the listener, to really chew on as you go back to your day and interact with these tools.
Let's hear it.
If up to 90% of our languages vanish in the next century, what happens to the knowledge, the localized science, and the history encoded within them? Think about the mechanics of RAG and perplexity that we discussed. Can an advanced AI tool ever truly synthesize a diverse perspective or trace a claim back to its original source if the language that source was written in no longer exists to be retrieved?
Wow. If the language is gone, the source is effectively gone. It is a brilliant, deeply unsettling question to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We covered a lot of ground today, from the architecture of modern search and the necessity of upgrading your prompts to the delicate balance between instant digital creation and the preservation of our human operating systems.
It's a lot to process, for sure.
We hope this gave you a new lens through which to view your own research habits and the wider information landscape. Stay insanely curious, take the time to read the actual sources, and please question everything. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.